This presentation has been previously broadcast.
The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
There's an increased number of people with Parkinson's disease, especially in the later years, 70 years of age and above. And it's not surprising that it's more men than women, because this particular disease seems to affect more men than women in general.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
All right, that audio from the Mayo Clinic. Good afternoon. It is good to be here with you today. I came across a story that I want to explore. You know, the great St. John Paul II, he died from Parkinson's disease, and you might have a loved one that has as well. Most of us today, the only thing we've been hearing, I guess, for the past year and a half now has been COVID-19, right? But there is it's a pandemic. It's terrible what has taken place, but there's another epidemic that at least one scientist is predicting could happen in the next 25 years. And this is what made me pause. He says the next epidemic that we could see would be Parkinson's disease. He says this degenerative neurological disorder, it mostly, as we know, it impacts the elderly. You know, and the world saw that with John Paul II. Symptoms include shaking, right? That uncontrollable shaking, especially in the hands, the head, eventually being unable to hold your head up. Well, The Guardian was reporting that just in the last 10 years here in our country, in the U.S., there's been a 35% increase in cases. 35%. And one researcher thinks it's going to double in the next quarter of a century. So what's the main culprit for the increase? Here's what they're claiming. So, you know, you might be able to put this off. There's a chemical. They abbreviate as TCE. It's a compound that's found in all kinds of everyday products that you use all the time. Carpet cleaners, lubricants, degreasers, right? Shoe polish. The stuff that, you know, those degreasers that, you know, the slime stuff that you put on your tires, your quick spare tire, you know, stain guards. How much of that is on your furniture, your clothing, things along those lines? In other words, it's in a lot of stuff that you use on a daily basis. But people who live either on top or near the so-called, you know, Superfund sites that have a lot of TCE in them have reported increased numbers of Parkinson's disease. So that could include, let's say, Google employees, because apparently their headquarters built on top of one of those sites, and the EPA found that it was seeping up through the floor of the headquarters. That could be a big lawsuit too, right? But there are actually a lot of chemicals that are connected to the disease that we have encountered, including cancer. You know, we always hear lots of accounts of that. And while, look, we use these chemicals every day, we rarely, I think, give them any thought or how they may impact us. So I thought we could look at this. We'll talk about it. Maybe you've got somebody in your life that you're concerned about. Dr. Anthony Jay is going to be joining me, and we'll tap into his expertise. He's the president and the CEO of AJ Consulting Company, and he actually graduated from Ave Maria University in Naples, Florida. Great, great university down there, and he researched HIV inhibitors and earned his PhD in biochemistry from Boston University School of Medicine, and it's great to have him here with us. He's the author of Estrogeneration, too, and we should talk to him about that one time. Doctor, thank you for your time. Good afternoon. Great to have you with me.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
This is a great, it's not a great topic. It's to me, a topic of great interest. As you know, John Paul II was taken by this, and I know a lot of people have loved ones who struggle with Parkinson's disease. How do you connect the dots between, let's say, a particular chemical and a disease resulting from that chemical being around? And it may not just be, you know, Parkinson's, it may be something else, but how's that done? What's the science behind that?
Well, they generally do animal studies and things like that, but of course, animals don't usually get Parkinson's. Mm-hmm. What you oftentimes will see is in a factory where they use trichloroethylene or TCE or some chemical like that, you'll notice a huge spike in some issue or other, like some specific type of cancer, six-fold increased risk in Parkinson's, like you mentioned. And then they'll put the dots together and start looking at it more carefully, hopefully, right?
Yeah. Right.
And sure enough, I mean, that's what you see. So there's a lot of products this TCE here in America, but I don't know if you're familiar with this. It's actually banned in Europe. They don't even allow any of it here in Europe. And over here in America, 250 million pounds per year.
Oh, my Lord.
Are
mercy.
Produced. So it's a problem.
250 million pounds per year? And
correct.
So Europe, of course, they must be aware of the problems that it causes. And yet it's in so many different products, isn't it? I mean, these products are probably being used by people listening right now.
Right. Oh, yeah. Well, the dry cleaning chemicals, for example, you know, you get that dry cleaning smell on your clothes.
Yeah, right.
They use it on especially those seed oils, you know, how we have like canola oil and flaxseed mm-hmm. oil and soybean oil on everything. They use it to extract those oils from the seeds. Seeds aren't particularly oily, so people are literally eating trace amounts of this stuff.
I also understand it's in groundwater. Is that true? I mean, how does it get in the groundwater? Does it seep there or is it naturally generated?
Yeah, it's a very small molecule, TCE, yeah. And you can actually check your area. There's a website called EWG, and they have this tap water database. It's connected with the government's testing sites. And like, for example, I live in Rochester, Minnesota, mm-hmm. and we've got, the last time I checked, we had 7 chemicals over the government's own recommended safety limit in our water.
Wow.
And that's bad. And a lot of cities, they have like 2 or 3. So I'm in a particularly bad area for pollution that seeped into the drinking water. And, you know, what you have to do is filter it. You have to filter your drinking water. I feel like that's pretty basic for everybody. I recommend that for everybody.
You know, we could talk about that too. So let me ask about municipal water systems. They do filter certain things out, but you're saying they probably don't filter this molecule out because it's so small?
Correct. Correct. They don't. They're great killing bacteria, killing viruses, killing living organisms that are dangerous parasites. Yeah. Terrible at filtering out birth control, which is part of my book that you mentioned in my bio. They're terrible at filtering out a lot of these small chemicals that act like estrogen disruptor hormones, or in this case with TCE, you know, alter your brain and cause long-term problems. And those long-term problems are harder to pin down in scientific studies, right? If you get cancer, oftentimes that happens a little quicker. The Parkinson's, you're not going to see that in younger people. You know, as we age, our detox pathways, our ability to clear out toxins, mm-hmm. our metabolism slows down. So you become more at risk with age.
So how do you detoxify? I'm curious about that personally. You know, if that happens as you begin to age, I mean, what's the strategy? What's the best way to do that? How do we detoxify?
Well, I'll give you at least 2 and maybe more if you want to keep going. But one of the interesting ways is sunshine. You know, just going out in the sun actually helps your body break down toxins. And it sounds kind of silly, but it's true. Like if you've got a tattoo, and I don't happen to have any tattoos, but I know people that do, of course. Sure. You have to put sunscreen on the tattoo because that ink underneath your skin is actually large particles of heavy metals like cobalt and chromium and cadmium.
Wow.
And when sunshine hits those particles, it breaks them into smaller particles. And then your immune system clears them out and your tattoo fades away. And that's actually how they do tattoo removals. That's a detoxification pathway. Similar, like even if you don't have tattoos, you still have toxins under your skin. Sunshine hits those, breaks them into smaller particles, your body clears them out. So sunshine's a great detox pathway. And then the sauna is another phenomenal way to sweat out toxins.
Oh, really? I'm going to buy a sauna. I had another physician on who said that to me before. I mean, he says, you can't imagine how good a sauna actually is for you. So not just, right. I guess, you know, getting the sweating out the particles or the, what am I looking for? What word am I trying to find here? Yeah. The toxins. Thank you.
Yeah, sure. Toxins. Yeah.
Out of the body. In terms of detoxifying, easy ways that we can do it, doesn't seem like it's that bad, but I get concerned about other things that we just can't seem to escape from. We're talking, if you're just joining us too, about Parkinson's, and we're finding that, you know, the products that you use, including dry cleaning, I get my shirts dry cleaned, right? You put those on or your pants, that stuff I'm assuming is against your body. Your body absorbs those chemicals or those stain removers or whatever else that is being used in the particular home at the time. What about estrogen? Because this is another one of those things that people cannot get away from. I I drink out of a plastic bottle, let's say, right? I do a radio, 3-hour radio show, so there's a jug of water that I buy, and who knows how long that thing's been sitting around, and those estrogen mimickers are leaching in there, or whatever else I'm getting from that plastic. We know fertilizer and the runoff into the waterways. We know contraception that is getting into the water supplies. And there's been studies done, as I'm sure, of wildlife with both genitalia or mutations of some sort. How big of a problem are estrogen mimickers, or just estrogen in general, in our water supply right now?
Oh, it's a huge problem. In the rural areas, the main chemical you have to watch out for is atrazine. It's just like trichloroethylene, TCE, that triggers this Parkinson's issue, atrazine is the second most used herbicide in North America.
Wow.
And it's illegal in Europe. Not allowed in Europe at all. Wow. And it's because it acts like estrogen. In fact, if just to give you some reference here, like the average male, our estrogen is about, let's say, 20. Women, it's about 200, 20 to 200, depending on the time of month. If you put a frog in 300 nanograms per liter of atrazine, this herbicide, right. You turn that male frog into a female.
Wow.
And it gets worse, because that's 300 nanograms per liter. In our drinking water, we have the legal allowable limit for atrazine is 3,000 nanograms per liter.
Wow. Wow, that doesn't seem right.
Drinking a lot of this. Yeah, it's not right. And Europe has figured that out. I think the problem is there's a lot of political influence, behind the scenes with money in America. But again, you have to filter your drinking water. And there's other chemicals too, like you mentioned, the birth control. So even if you don't live in farmland or rural areas, where there's a lot of spraying chemicals or near golf courses, the big cities have the birth control problem. I mean, the drinking water is full of it. And I go through that in my book really carefully, because, when you list out the levels in those situations, in those cities, and how much of an impact that has, we're all taking a low dose level of birth control if we're not filtering our drinking water.
Yeah, that to me is so striking. And the reason I say that, I cannot tell you, I've never heard of so many people struggling with infertility today. I don't know whether there's been any studies done to say, hey, there could be a link here. I mean, if you're constantly ingesting this, even though it's at a low level, that could be enough to impede, the ability to become pregnant. Have you studied that? What do we know about estrogen and birth rates right now?
Oh, yeah, 100%. It definitely causes decreased fertility, complete infertility, animals, humans, fish, all this sort of things. And the problem is with these estrogen chemicals.
Yeah.
First of all, atrazine, and then we added birth control. But then you can add the plastic chemicals, like you mentioned, from the plastic bottles, even if they're BPA-free. The reason BPA is bad, by the way, it acts like estrogen.
Huh.
A lot of people don't realize that. They recognize it's bad, but they don't know why. It's because they used to study it as birth control. In the 1920s, they researched BPA as a birth control, and it works in that regard. But then they discovered it turns into plastic, and they changed directions. But there's a whole host of estrogen chemicals. In my book, I talk about 10 of them, that we're literally exposed to every day.
Wow.
Because, Agent Orange disrupts your estrogen and disrupts your testosterone and your sex hormones, but we're not exposed to Agent Orange every day, hopefully.
Yeah, right.
But we are exposed to atrazine, these contraceptives, these plastic chemicals, and on and on and on. Some of the fragrances. In fact, a lot of the fragrances, some of the personal care products are a hot, hot button.
Really?
And then they all add up. It's like 1 + 1 + 1. Eventually you got 10. Wow. And that's a lot more of a dose than scientific researchers are studying, because they're assuming you're just exposed to one.
So if women wear perfume or men wear cologne, should they be concerned?
Oh, yeah, for sure. They've done studies on pregnant women, and they find perfume users have, for example, 170% higher phthalate levels in their blood and urine.
Wow.
So phthalates, another chemical used in plastic, usually in BPA-free plastic, acts like estrogen in your body. And not only is it used in plastic, they use it in perfumes. It's like a cheap filler.
Wow.
It's a petroleum product. So, because you could ask, well, why in the heck are they putting this plastic chemical, these phthalates, and it's spelled phthalates, phthalates. Why would they be putting phthalates in your perfume? Well, that's why. It's because it's cheap, it's a filler. Supposedly, it carries the fragrance through the air farther. That's what I've discovered when talking to chemists about why they use it in their products.
Right.
It's just because it's a cheap filler, and paraben's the same thing.
Wow. You know, I had heard years ago, I don't know how true this is, but people put on deodorant every day. And somebody had said, oh, I don't do it because there's aluminum in it, and I don't want that getting into my body. Mm. How I don't say how nefarious, but how problematic is deodorant? Are there chemicals in that people should second think or think twice about, I should say?
Oh, sure.
Really?
Yeah, scientists used to laugh. Scientists used to laugh when you said saunas are a good way to detox because you sweat out toxins. They used to laugh and say, no, that's not true. Now it's so well established. There's review papers written on it. There's hundreds of studies. It's very clear that that's the case. It's the same with aluminum. They used to laugh and say, no, it can't go through your skin. It's an inert metal. Mm-hmm. In fact, I've literally had people laugh at me for suggesting that when I was doing my PhD in Boston. Now they've finally done a study on aluminum transdermal uptake, meaning skin uptake, meaning it goes through your skin. And sure enough, it goes through your skin. Now it's pretty low level, but the problem with aluminum, it can bioaccumulate, it can build up.
Yep.
And it's definitely linked to Alzheimer's and Parkinson's. But so I recommend people use a magnesium-based deodorant because they work. You know, I don't like the glycerol ones, the ones that are aluminum-free, but they just have glycerol. It just doesn't work. I've tried a lot of them. But they do make a few magnesium-based ones. And, you know, those actually work, and they're natural. If you're absorbing some magnesium, good for you. You know, it's healthy.
Right.
It's anti-inflammatory. And then the other problem with deodorants is they have a lot of fragrances. And in America, they're legally allowed to say fragrance on the label and not tell you what those quote-unquote secret ingredients are.
Wow.
But most of the time, those proprietary ingredients are just estrogen chemicals, estrogen-mimicking chemicals that are bad for you. So you don't know if it just says fragrance. I would suggest going fragrance-free at least if you're unsure about that particular company that you're buying from.
All right, let me do this. I'm going to open the phones. We'll take a few calls. If you want to join us, feel free to dial in. Here's the number for you. You might have a question. You might want to follow up on something you heard. The number is 888-914-9149. You can call now. It's 888-914-9149. We'll take your calls. Let's start in New Jersey, Doctor. We'll say hello to Asha. Did I get that right? Ashu in New Jersey. Asha, right? Did I get your name right?
Asha, yes, you have
Asha,
it right.
Hi, too. Welcome.
Hi, thank you so much. I have two questions. One is, I missed the very beginning of the show, where to find out more information that your guest is speaking, like how to zero in on his knowledge base.
Great.
And does he have a website or where would we go?
All right. Doctor, what's the best way to connect or to read your book?
And then I have another question.
Sure.
Also.
Well, it's a good one. Let's get everybody plugged in so they can learn more.
Yeah. I get a softball question to plug my book, huh? So my book is called, Drew pronounced it correctly. Some people struggle. It's called Estrogeneration, How Estrogenics Are Making You Fat, Sick, and Infertile. I have a PhD in biochemistry. I graduated from Ave Maria University, actually. And then for the past 3 years, I've been a researcher at Mayo Clinic in Minnesota, a scientist here in Minnesota. So that's the and I have my website is ajconsultingcompany.com. It's a terrible website name, but I've had it for over 10 years.
ajconsultingcompany.com. All right, we can do that. Estrogeneration is the book. So what's your question?
Okay. Now, here's my big question.
Yeah.
He mentioned twice, I don't know, it's a doctor, I don't know his name, sorry to say he. He mentioned twice about water filtration. I would like to know what specific types or brands of water filtration. Can he really get into that? Because that's something I'd be very interested in doing. Mm-hmm. I had an ozone filter at one time, and the company recalled it, and now... You know, I've been with tap water ever since.
It's a wonderful question because the doctor, if you're just joining us, we're talking about, chemicals that are in the water and a lot of the products you have. And he suggested that everyone should you know, filter their water. And I'm thinking, well, do you use reverse osmosis? You know, what kind of filtration do you use? So that's a great question. What would you suggest to people? An in-house system? Is it something that attaches to the faucet? I mean, I know some people buy Britas and they just pour the water through the charcoal filter. What do you recommend?
Yeah, thanks. Well, first of all, too, my last name is Jay, so a lot of people call me Dr. Jay, like the basketball player, in case you have trouble remembering for Nasha over in New Jersey.
Dr. Jay.
I mean, I don't have any affiliations with any companies in terms of this, but on my website, I do list the specific reverse osmosis system that I use because it doesn't have a plastic tank under your sink, so there's no plastic. It's all stainless steel, and it takes all the toxins, all the garbage out of your water, and then it remineralizes it. So it puts magnesium back into it, some calcium back into it. It tastes good. So again, that one's on ajconsultingcompany.com. But the most important thing for people to realize with filtering water is you've got to use activated charcoal. I wouldn't necessarily recommend just ozone or just UV or something like that, because again, the municipal water is well purified. Regardless, you're already killing off all the bacteria, the viruses. You don't have to add more stuff to do that. Usually you have to use activated charcoal because that grabs onto these really tiny little chemicals like TCE. It grabs onto these estrogen chemicals like BPA, like the contraceptive chemicals. It grabs all that stuff and removes it.
All right. I'll tell you what, Doc. All right, let's say grab another call. Jake, how much time do I have? Should I take a break now? All right, let me take a short break. When we come back, we'll grab a few more calls. Asha, thank you for your call. It was a great call, great question. If you want to join us, our toll-free number, 888-914-9149. Taking a look at a news story that's gotten a lot of attention, an increase in Parkinson's disease. Scientists are predicting, you know, in the next 25 years, it could be a real epidemic. And they're finding certain chemicals are the cause of it. And we're talking about chemicals and estrogen and things that are now seeping into our water. You might say, well, I got a well. Am I okay? Well, we can talk about that. We'll take your calls for Dr. J. I like that. Great sixer when we return. Stay with me. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
This is the Drew Mariani Show. Where else can you get news and issues of the day from a Catholic lens? Keep it here on Relevant Radio.
Well, thanks for joining me. It is good to be here with you today. I was over the weekend reading, and I saw an article that I thought you should know about it. It said that rates of Parkinson's disease are exploding, and a common chemical, is to blame. And they believe that this chemical is used in everything from dry cleaning to your household products, shoe polishes, carpet cleaners, stain removers. And I've invited today Dr. Anthony Jay to join me. And we're talking about how to keep yourself safe, what you need to know. And we're not just talking Parkinson's. We're talking about estrogen, which is everywhere. And it is probably in your water. And we're seeing how it has caused mutation in wildlife, how we are seeing a decrease in fertility. We're seeing a lot of different issues manifest. And if you have a question you want to get in, we'll take your calls. The number here for you, 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. And doctor, let's just jump right back into the phones. We'll take a few more calls. Who's up next, Jay? Maria? Maria in Moline, Illinois. Good afternoon. Hi, Maria. Good afternoon. I'll give her another second. Let me move to the next call. Teresa in Illinois. Good afternoon. Welcome.
Hi. I've been concerned about water for a long time. And so I work in a school system, and as I've been using cleaning products because of COVID, I realized one day that a combination of them may be giving me toxic vapors, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure.
And I decided I needed to look at the label of this thing. And about a week ago, a friend of mine sent me an email, and it mentioned TCE. And so, indeed, this is exactly what these wipes, which were distributed, thousands and thousands of containers of these things, right? And so what I want to know, because I work with, because I was using it a lot when I was testing kindergartners, okay? I'm not touching them with it, but I had to clean lots of cards, okay? Mm-hmm. Somebody suggested that they use, this was just in terms of the cards, right, to use nitrate gloves, right? So what I want to know, I have a couple of questions. What I want to know is, will the TCE penetrate these nitrate gloves or
nitrile? Nitrile, yeah.
Nitrile, okay, yeah. Sorry.
Yeah, no, it should be okay. It should not penetrate. I mean, unless you have pure liquid TCE or something and it might melt it, but I don't think
you'll know that.
Okay.
It should be okay in that regard.
Because my interest has always been in radiation because of my background in going to the Soviet Union. Mm-hmm. And so do you have a good website for identifying all the aquifers in the United States?
I do not, no. I would definitely check EWG, though, because they've got that tap water database that I mentioned earlier.
Okay. It's EWG?
It's very thorough. EWG,
okay.
Yep.
EWG,
EWG okay. Tap water database.
Okay. All right. And just one more question, and this includes Drew, which is that in the 1950s, there was an article. I haven't looked it up yet, but there was an article by a scientist by the name of Luria, mm-hmm. and the Soviets discovered that, what do you call it? Not shortwave radiation. It's the stuff that comes, microwave. Okay, microwave radiation causes, it can cause, what do you call it? When you brainwashing people, okay? So can we ever bring someone on who can look into this and talk about it?
Yeah,
and,
I've never...
You know, like
I've,
4G and 5G?
Sure, Teresa, I appreciate the call. In fact, we've had somebody talking about, you know, your Wi-Fi and 4G and 5G. 5G's, I know there's a lot of concern about. And doctor, I don't know whether you can speak to that at all. I never heard about microwaves having the ability to brainwash. Have you heard anything along those lines?
No, but I've looked into it a little bit. I mean, you know, microwave is a pretty weak wavelength, so you have to have a lot of power. It's kind of like, you know, there's infrared light. You can't even see infrared because it's so weak. And then you get into red, orange, yellow, green, you know, the Roy G. Biv, and then blue, indigo, violet being stronger. I mean, microwaves aren't that strong. So you'd basically have to put it on somebody's head directly in an open microwave situation or something to get to that extreme.
So are microwaves in general, outside of the ability to broadcast a microwave, I mean, we're talking about the microwaves in your kitchen, right? That heat your food, that excite the molecules, is that at all dangerous? I mean, and again, I don't want to be too conspiratorial here. I mean, there have been some people who say, oh, yeah, you know, I'll never use a microwave. I don't know if there's any evidence. We're selling, I don't know how many million of microwaves a year in this country.
Right.
I mean, what do you know about microwaves?
No, I'm not as pessimistic about that as a lot of people that are, you know, talking about it. I mean, I've looked at the research pretty close, and they're pretty safe as far as that goes. You know, again, certainly wouldn't want to be like putting your head up next to the machine or something like that. You might get a little bit of radiation, but even that, it's arguably fine because it's how much is it actually damaging your body? Your skin is pretty good at blocking a lot of that radiation. Now, again, I could be disproven. I'd be open-minded about that because I've not looked into it really deep.
Yeah. No, I got you. All right, we'll take calls. We have a lot to talk about here. If you want to join us, 888-914-9149. Teresa, thank you for your call, by the way. I will maybe in the days ahead do something on 5G technology. And did you look into that at all, Dr. Jang? 5G, are you concerned about that at all?
It's hard because I've looked into it a little bit, and I realized it's this giant rabbit hole. Yeah. I have a connection. I can email you in terms of who might be a good guest.
I'd love that. That'd be great.
No, I've not done a lot of research. The problem is they use different terms for it in scientific studies. And when you start diving into that, you have to be familiar with all the different terms that they use for those different types of radiation. I'm just not a physicist.
Right. All right. We'll go to Maria next. She's in, again, Illinois. Let's see if she's with us this time. She's been waiting a while to join the conversation. Hi, Maria.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
You're
Quick
welcome.
Question. Because we already know that the plastic in the for bottles has this estrogen that we're talking about, and still, just the bottle by itself creates so many things in our cities. Yet they continue to sell water in bottles, and we continue to drink it. How is that? Major corporation does not understand that this is not very harmful to us.
Yeah. And doctor,
and what can you do?
Okay, hey, Maria, thank you. Sure. It's a legitimate concern because, boy, water bottles are everywhere. And they're estrogen mimickers, right? Yeah. That we get in our bottles, right?
Correct.
There a loss? Could there be a lawsuit? Ever thought of, you know, suing these places that are serving you water that could, you know, create these problems for you health-wise? But what do you know about that? And have they refuted the science, or what's behind that?
Yeah, the problem with lawsuits is they had one with glyphosate that was multi-billions of dollars. It was like $2 billion, I think, and with specific to certain types of cancer and everything. But the difficulty with cancer and with a lot of the health problems from artificial estrogens, including things like depression, right? Like birth control users have higher rates of depression. They've done studies with 30,000 people, and they like a huge group of people. When they have depression, for example, in birth control. And by the way, children with higher BPA in their urine have higher depression rates. So these things happen. Infertility, there's a lot of things that are very clear, very proven. But it takes decades sometimes to see the health impacts from that.
Yep.
And depression is a good example of how difficult it is because people aren't very honest. You know, if you ask them, do you have depression? They don't want to say yes because then it's on their permanent record and all this kind of thing. And so, you know, it's tricky to do those studies. And when it takes 10 years for the chemical to have an impact and to cause breast cancer is up 250% since 1980 in America. And some countries it's 500%, like the Philippines. Some of these countries where we're bringing all these industrial chemicals in and we're mass producing plastics and things, you see a huge rise in breast cancer. And dressing up NFL football players like newborn baby girls in pink is not solving the problem. Basically, raising awareness for breast cancer is not solving these problems. We have to get rid of these chemicals, like you're saying, Maria. And it starts by using stainless steel bottles or glass jars to put your water in after you filter it. Even if your filter is plastic, filter it and then pour it out into a glass pitcher, something like that. And then when you travel, once in a while you're going to use some plastic, right? Like you go on a flight somewhere, you travel. I mean, I still bring my stainless bottle, but you know, you don't want to become obsessive about it and hypochondriac. Just try not to have yourself exposed every single day.
I'm speaking today, Dr. Anthony Jay. We're taking a look at some of the chemicals that are in our water and how they affect you. I am struck by the fact that there's a link between that birth control and depression. I had a conversation with my wife the other day. I'm just looking at these numbers, and I know you're not a psychiatrist or a psychologist, so you probably can't even answer this. Maybe you can. I don't know. The rate of anxiety in this country. So we see this link to depression. Right. So, OK, now there's a link there that you point out. I'm just wondering, and I was thinking, well, maybe it's this generation of kids that have grown up that have been exposed to electronics or to, you know, computers, laptops, whatever it is. Maybe it did something to the development of the brain, or maybe it is chemical. I hear from more parents on this radio program. I bump into more people who have loved ones that struggle with anxiety in some capacity at all. Is there a chemical link to that at all? Have you done it? Have you ever heard of that or found anything? Or I'm just throwing a dart at the wall here, but I'm curious. Oh, really? Tell me.
Oh, yeah. Appreciate that. Well, I do DNA consulting with 23andMe data.
Yeah.
And probably about 40% of people have risk genes for anxiety.
Wow.
And most people almost, you know, and most of those genes are related to serotonin. And if you get anxiety, the doctors will prescribe you a selective serotonin reuptake inhibitor, an SSRI. It's usually Prozac or Zoloft or Lexapro. There's a whole host of these chemicals or these drugs. And they're all artificial. They cause side effects. They're very risky. And they're trying to increase serotonin in your brain. Now, what most people don't talk about is 90% of your serotonin is made in your gut. So if you're screwing up your gut bacteria, if you're eating unhealthy, if you're exposing yourself to all kinds of these chemicals, again, ingesting them, whether it's through drinking plastic or whatever. Because again, sure. Plastics, these are not something our ancestors were exposed to. These are not something bacteria have ever been exposed to historically. And so, you know, like, our system is not built for this. Our bodies don't know what to do with this stuff. Even the bacteria don't know what to do with this stuff. TCE, similar, you know, it's not a natural compound. It's not something found in nature or artificially. It's just not naturally occurring. So as you can imagine, it screws up our gut bacteria, screws up our serotonin production, and then that leads to anxiety and depression sometimes. Yeah.
Wow. That's fascinating. Absolutely fascinating. All right. I'll go back to the phones. A lot of people want to join the conversation. If you're on hold, I'm grateful for your patience. Hang out with me. I'll do my very best to get you on. We'll go to Orange County, California next. Mike wants to join the conversation. He's got a question for you. Mike, good afternoon.
How you doing?
Well, thanks. Thanks for calling. How are you?
Okay. Thank you. A little background. My wife and I had our first child. We tried again. She had a miscarriage at 12 weeks. Tried again, had a second child. And then for the next three tries, she miscarried at 14 weeks, 14 weeks, and 17 weeks.
Wow.
We did testing. They couldn't find anything wrong. They said, you know, you guys can obviously make a baby. There's nothing wrong with you and nothing wrong with her. But we're wondering if there's something that we're, you know, ingesting that is causing that. You know, we try to use natural products, but we're also trying to save money, so we're also not buying expensive natural products.
Sure enough, yeah.
Is there anything that
one thing I have to offer from my experience, and a lot of people that have chronic miscarriages, number one, you want to get rid of all the estrogens in your environment as best you can. Again, the plastics, the fragrances, filter your drinking water. Those are the big hitters. But then number two, a lot of people have a gene called MTHFR. It's doctors call it Monday, Thursday, Friday, MTHFR. And you basically struggle to convert folic acid to methylfolate. Now, is she taking folic acid?
No.
Okay.
She's taking prenatal vitamins. I'm not sure if that's in
prenatal. Exactly. She's taking folic acid. Yeah.
Yep.
Prenatal vitamins have a lot of folic acid. Folic acid, it's fake. It's not found in nature. It used to be patented. And a lot of people have difficulty converting folic acid, this fake chemical, to methylfolate, which is what your body needs to make new DNA. Methylfolate is a DNA building block. Right? And a fetus growing really, really fast needs lots of new DNA. And if your body's not converting this fake folic acid to methylfolate, then you struggle to do that and you end up with miscarriages oftentimes. But you want to do at least take methylfolate. Get rid of the prenatal vitamin and take methylfolate. You just type in 5-MTHF into Amazon and you'll find methylfolate. That's a good start. Drew, do you have any other suggestions? Maybe the John Paul II Institute?
Yeah, that's like a great one. That's a wonderful one. Yeah, if you're having these types of problems, I'd look into the Helchers Institute, you know, or John Paul II. There's a lot of people out there who can, you know, help take a look at why your wife is miscarrying at that particular moment or that stage of development and maybe give you some insight. But, Mike, thank you for the call. I do appreciate it. Doctor, stay with me. I'm going to take a short break. When we come back, we'll grab a few more calls because I'm up against the clock once again. My guest, Dr. Anthony Jay, he wrote a book. If you want to read it, it's available at Amazon. You can check out his website. His website, by the way, is ajconsultingcompany.com. He laughs about the website because he's had it for 10 years, but you can find his book, Estrogeneration, there as well. I'm going to take a short pause. When we come back, we'll talk more. Stay with me.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Well, thanks for joining me, and thank you for your patience. It's always good to hang out with you. If you've missed any part of this conversation, let me just give you a little bit of advice. Go back after the broadcast is over and download it. Jake will have it up probably about an hour after we're off. You could stream it. You can, you know, listen to it again. A lot of great information today as we're taking a look at a study that's come out pinpointing some chemicals that may contribute to the rise of Parkinson's. And I've invited a guest today, Dr. Anthony Jay. He's president and CEO of the company AJ Consulting. But he's worked for several years as a researcher at the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota, researching stem cells and epigenetics and infrared light. And he wrote a book called Estrogeneration. And we're taking a look at chemicals and the impact it's having on everything from depression and anxiety to fertility. And you and I were talking during the break, and I know you mentioned John Paul II Center. I had a producer who had four or five miscarriages. She actually went to the Hilsers Institute, and boy, they're phenomenal with that. I know you wanted to bring up a quick point of clarification, so I'll let you go right ahead.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. I said John Paul II Institute, also very good, but I meant to say the St. Paul, the Sixth Thomas Hilgers Institute in Omaha, Nebraska.
Yeah, Paul the Sixth, yeah.
Again, just a clarification.
That's great. That's awesome. All right, well, let's go to the phones. We got a lot of calls. Sue is listening in Wisconsin. Sue, thanks for your patience. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Drew. So my mother is 86 years old, and she's diagnosed with Parkinson's. And about 2 weeks ago, it took a turn for the worst. We didn't know. They thought she was just dehydrated. They put her in the hospital. She was there for about a week, and they said there's no more that they can do for her. She's at the top of all her meds and such, and it's just such a debilitating disease. It's horrible to watch her. She's down to 100 pounds.
Wow.
I want to know, is there anything at all that we can do for her right now to help her rally back? She tells me, I don't want to die. I'm not ready to die.
Oh, no.
And she just doesn't have an appetite. She doesn't want to eat. She doesn't want to drink. The ability for her to eat and drink is still there. So she's not at that point.
Mm-hmm.
But she's the hunger, I mean, she's just not hungry or thirsty anymore.
Okay.
So is there anything, I mean, anything at all that we can do? Anything? Anything we can give her?
It's hard. It's a challenge. I don't have any like amazing suggestions, or I'd probably have a Nobel Prize or something. But yeah. I mean, yeah. I've definitely seen a lot of research on creatine. Creatine has beneficial properties specific to Parkinson's. It's very cheap. It's over the counter. It's very safe. The other thing, I would look into the research on nicotine, like nicotine gum. I'm not talking about smoking cigarettes, just nicotine.
Right.
There's a lot of research being done on the benefits of nicotine.
All right, Sue, hang in there. I'm sorry. I know how difficult it is to lose a mother, and this is a tough time for you.
I just can't do this.
Yeah.
I know. It's horrible.
Okay.
And then I have one other quick question.
Yeah, go ahead.
Bottled water, like Smart Water, Dasani, you know, all the waters that are pH balanced and alkaline, are those okay to drink? Hmm. And does everything that has that TCH in it, does that have to be, or TCE, yeah, does it have to be marked? In the ingredients.
All right.
Yeah, well, it's not going to be in the ingredients for things like dry cleaning. You know, if you pick up your dry cleaning and your clothes smell like that, you might want to just put them out in the garage and let them air out for a day or two or something. But in terms of those smart waters, if they're in plastic, that's a problem. I would not drink them every day. Once in a while is fine. I would filter your own drinking water.
Yeah.
And if you want to pH balance it or something, throw a little magnesium powder in there or something like that. Don't buy those plastic bottled products regularly.
So let me ask you a personal question. I have a bunch of bottles of water, right? And they'll rattle around in my car. They'll, you know, fall off the seat and end up under the seat, right? If they freeze or they're exposed to sunlight in the car, does that leach even more chemicals into that? So, like, don't drink that bottle of water if it's in the hot sun for a while or if it's frozen, right?
The heat. Yeah, freezing is fine. Freezing slows down molecular motion, so there's less transfer. But when you heat things up, it speeds up. So anytime you're like boiling something in plastic, it's terrible. Like heating something in the microwave, even worse.
Yeah.
Room temperature is bad enough. And by the way, oils are worse too. There's more transfer with oils than with just water.
Huh.
So like olive oil in a plastic bottle is more problematic. You want to get it in glass or
avocado
oil or something like that.
And then the microwaves, if I put saran wrap plastic over your food to reheat it, or if you get those Glad, you know, plastic, you know, containers that people have, they put their leftovers in and they reheat it in the microwave. Is that problematic?
Yeah.
Does that leach the chemicals into the food?
Only if it's in contact.
Which
yeah,
it is, right?
But if you've got a cover hovering over it and it's not touching the food, it's fine. But if it's in contact with the food, it's leaching. And if it's liquid, it's leaching even more. So I use glass Tupperware, but yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, put the plastic Tupperware, if you're heated, that's probably not a good idea. All right, well, let's just...
Yeah, take it out of there. Yep.
All right, good to know. Steven is listening in San Antonio. Hey, Steven, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I have two questions. I currently have a reverse osmosis system, and I typically use sodium, but should I be using potassium? And my second question is, what are your thoughts on alkaline water?
Hmm. Yeah, sure. I mean, alkaline, they've done studies that doesn't really change your pH of your blood necessarily, but it's not bad for you. It's good. I mean, I would recommend nose breathing and focusing on breathing as opposed to mouth breathing, and that actually changes the acidity of your blood even better, even more so, especially at night when you're sleeping. Hmm. There's a book called Breath by James Nestor. If you want to learn a lot about that, it's a very powerful tool. And to just putting sodium, I agree with you. I would add some potassium or something. Are you using just table salt for the sodium?
I'm using a typical, Morton's salt you sell and you put into your reverse osmosis.
Right. I would get there's a company called Redmond, and they have an ancient seabed in Utah, so there's no pollution because it's an ancient seabed.
Wow.
Or something like that, like an ancient seabed, like Himalayan salt. Put something like that because, number one, it has more iodine, and it's actually pink in color, and number two, it's got more potassium, and you want that potassium. Most Americans have too much sodium and not enough potassium. Sodium's fine if you have plenty of potassium, but you want a better ratio between those two, between sodium and potassium.
Yeah, I had a doctor who was on the program with me, and he recommended pink Himalayan salt, you know, to drop in. It's just a couple grains, put in your water that you're drinking, and it'll be really good for you.
Correct.
I also have a friend that you mentioned, you talk about the seabed in Utah. He was getting something from some ancient lake, some sort of blue or green algae. Are you familiar with that at all people take?
Oh, sure.
So what is that? What's that all about?
Well, they're supposed to absorb toxins. It's a little bit questionable, though. I mean, you know, because a lot of the toxins you have are actually stored up in your fat cells. Mm-hmm. And so if you take some of these algae and it's just staying in your gut and going in one end and coming out the other, it's not actually ending up in your blood, and it's certainly not ending up in your fat cells. And that's actually one of the biggest problems with these estrogen chemicals too that we've been talking about, like BPA, phthalates, these birth control chemicals. They store up in your fat.
Yep.
So it's hard to research because sometimes they're in there and you don't pick them up in the blood that much. But there's a lot, like they've even done studies on polar bears, Drew. Polar bears in northern Alaska, they studied 11 of them. And all of them had parabens in their fat.
Fascinating.
Parabens, like from fragrance.
And that's unbelievable.
Estrogen. So it's working up a chain.
Boy, that's that. You know, I learned something new about colognes and perfume today too. That should be an eye opener for a lot of people. Joy's listening to us in San Luis Obispo, California. Hi, Joy. Good afternoon.
Hi. Good afternoon. I apologize if this has already been discussed, but I was wondering what Dr. J's opinion was in regards to the isoestrogens affecting, like, the masculinization of the fetal brain.
Well, good question.
And fetal how brain, that might affect dysphoria.
That's a great question, Joy. Yeah. Thank you very much. Go ahead, Doctor. I'll let you take that.
I missed the very last part, how it might affect...
The fetal brains.
What was the word? Yeah, just fetal brain. I picked that up. Okay. But yeah... Sorry, say the very last part of your question, Joy.
Just normal sexualization of the brain, and might that explain some of the gender dysphoria?
Yeah.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, in fact, I've talked to people behind the scenes, even doctors at Mayo Clinic, I've talked to them about this, because, of course, nobody wants to go public and say this because of the politics, but there's a major issue with that. And in animal studies, you can pick it up. I mean, they even talk about male feminization in professional scientific journals, from atrazine specifically, that's one's most common. But a number of other, you know, like chemicals, like I say, that act like estrogen, it generally demotivates animals. Like if you've got a male and you give them these birth controls or you give them other estrogen acting chemicals, estrogen mimicking chemicals, you see a lot of these, you see apathy, especially sexual apathy.
Yeah.
And you can read about that in my book. I go into a lot of detail on that.
Wow. We only have a couple minutes left. Let me see if I can sneak another call in. Let me see who's up. Carol, listening in Wisconsin. Carol, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Drew. I'm so glad I got a hold of, let the doctor answer my question. Long ago, I heard about polypropylene glycol as
right.
being not a good thing.
Mm.
I find out even in the COVID shot, and I once I called a doctor who was in charge of making something that I heard the doctor talk about Rochester, Minnesota. They have a cream there that's especially good, and they gave me a chance to talk to him, and I said, why do you put polypropylene glycol in this? Because he said, you wouldn't like it if I didn't. In our food and everything that's used to defrost grain.
All right, I'll tell you what, I'm going to, your signal's breaking up a little bit, Carol, so let me let him respond to that. Isn't that the chemical that's in antifreeze?
Yeah, and well, I mean, yes, and I was going to say, I thought she was going to say polyethylene glycol, which is what they're using in the COVID vaccine.
That's probably what she meant.
Yeah, well, and it's funny because I know a scientist from NYU, from Duke University, and he's always been out talking because he studies toxins as well, just like I do. And he talks a lot about how bad polyethylene glycol, he's been saying it for years. And then when they came out with the COVID vaccine, he suddenly switched his tune and started saying like, well, it is bad, but we know we got to do this for the greater good. And all this. It's polyethylene glycol, polypropylene glycol. These are not natural chemicals. Again, there's something that we're making from petroleum products. Our ancestors were not exposed.
Yeah.
They're problematic. I'd be very skeptical of those.
Hey, Doctor, great talking with you today. I'd love to have you back. We can revisit this conversation and more again. You can check out the doctor online at check out his book, Estrogeneration, and be sure and share this conversation. It'll be in the archives.